Strange Fruit.
Jeez.
Billie Holiday. Yeah, jeez.
Billie Holiday really has one of my favorite voices in the world ever, as I'm sure it's that for many people. But
yeah, no doubt.
I love the imperfections in her voice and how mm-hmm. they really convey the emotional meaning of a song.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like raspy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was one of a kind. She died about 2 years after that recording at a very young age. And I was reading more about her. She actually learned a lot of old standards while she was working in a brothel at the age of like 12. So, yeah, it's she had a hard life, but she left a lot of good art. So.
Yeah.
Let's move on to your number 7, Ryan Blake.
All right. Well, my number 7 was my probably favorite band from the 90s. As you well know, it's Pearl Jam.
Okay.
And
oh, I know this one.
Yeah. And
this
I don't really
got played on MTV a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like once or twice.
So, yeah, it's the song Jeremy, and I don't really remember when I first heard the song that I really thought what I thought when I saw the video. You know, I didn't really get the same, but they really depicted it in a pretty deliberate way.
Right.
In the video of the kid killing himself in front of the classroom.
Right.
It was,
Jeremy spoke in class.
I have
class
a vivid
today.
Memory of seeing this video for the first time.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah, because MTV made a huge deal out of it.
They and you remember.
Like, the world premiere, right. Jeremy.
But I remember in particular really being struck by the scene with the, I think the kid was trying to talk to the parents and the parents were like cardboard cutouts.
Oh, yeah. Right. They're frozen.
Yeah.
And he's yelling at them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Daddy didn't give attention to the fact that mommy didn't care.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a powerful song.
Yeah. Yeah. Really great. So that's the song I picked. And I found a version that's from their MTV Unplugged performance back then, which is pretty great.
That was when... Well, he didn't do it during this song, but that was when Eddie Vedder like wrote "Choice" on his album or something, and
right?
Went all crazy.
Uh huh. That was during "Porch" that he did that.
Yeah, it was a great performance.
Yeah,
for sure. I remember.
And it's really early on in their whole thing. So this is Pearl Jam with Jeremy, and it's 1994.
No, it's from
91.
Yeah, from 10. So it's 91.
Yeah. I've done that twice now, thinking that Pearl Jam's from 94, but it's 91.
At home, drawing pictures of mountain tops with him on. Yeah.
Oh, Eddie Vedder is so dreamy.
He is. He's got that strong jawline and the.
He's a dreamboat.
And those eyes. Mm.
It's all in the eyes.
Is that what it is? Yeah, that's a good. That's a good pick. I was hoping that you'd pick Jeremy. I knew you. Well, I didn't know you would. I was hoping you.
But you know, like Summer, you mentioned the couple scenes from the video, like with the people that are all like white and covered in blood and like
all the students.
Right. Yeah, it's so vivid, you know.
Yeah.
Ah.
They do that a few times in the video. They create these still tableaus while Jeremy is meanwhile doing something.
Yeah. Like the cardboard parrots.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was the last video Pearl Jam did for a long time.
That's true, huh?
Yeah, like Do the Evolution was the next one they did. It was like 10 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. But man, I mean, that would be a hard level to match up to. That was really like one of the, maybe one of the best videos ever, you know, in representing a generation or a.
In terms of amount of times it got played, it was definitely in the top 10.
But even in terms of maybe.
No, it was really good.
I mean, they were claiming like copycat kids for that, and which I remember finding so ironic.
Are you talking about Columbine and stuff?
Well, I just remember hearing like some kind of thing happened and then they blamed it on the Jeremy video. And I'm like, the Jeremy video is about parents who don't pay attention and they blame something else for not raising their kids right. And then in reality, the parents are blaming the video for their kids doing stuff that is wrong, you know?
Because they were lazy because they didn't want to.
I couldn't believe that nobody else could see that, you know, that was the whole point, that those parents, some of those.
Oh, sweet irony.
Yeah. Great. Great.
My number six also has to do with a school shooting.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah. We're going to stick with that theme for a little bit here. In 1979, there was a girl in San Diego by the name of Brenda Ann Spencer, 16 years old, who went on a killing spree at her school. She shot two teachers. This is like in the playground, I guess. She just lost it and shot her. She shot two teachers.
How old was she?
She was 16.
Okay.
She killed two. She injured nine, including a police officer and eight other students. And she just kind of just went nuts. And they interviewed her and they asked her why she did it. And her answer was, "I don't like Mondays."
Oh.
She said, "I don't like Mondays. This livens up the day." And just very bizarre. But over in Ireland, there was a band called the Boomtown Rats featuring Bob Geldof.
Yeah, and they wrote a song called "I Don't Like Mondays."
Exactly, and that's what this song's about.
Okay.
He had read that in the paper and was like, "That's just so bizarre. I have to."
Inspiration.
And, yeah. So the lyrics are kind of try to get inside her head a little bit. What was it? The silicon chip inside her head gets switched to overload. And nobody's going to go to school today. She's going to make them stay at home. And daddy doesn't understand it. It's kind of like the Jeremy thing. Daddy doesn't understand it. He always said she was good as gold. And he can see no reasons because there are no reasons. What reasons do you need to be shown? And then, you know, tell me why I don't like Mondays. And I want to shoot the whole day down. You know, this song was number one in England for the Boomtown Rats. And it was number one like all over the world except the U.S. because they deliberately.
Because it happened here.
Right. They deliberately kept it out of radio stations.
Yeah.
Because out of respect for the family or whatever. And it's I think it's officially banned in San Diego.
Hmm.
Because that's, you know, that's where it happened. But I think it's a brilliant song.
Cool.
I love the piano. I love the great hook that no reason because the oh no reason, you know. It's really brilliant, and it's my number six. This is the Boomtown Rats from 1979. I don't like Mondays.
Thank you. chip inside her head gets switched to overload. And nobody's gonna go to school today. She's gonna make them stay at home. Daddy doesn't understand it. He always said she was good as gold. And he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be shown? Tell me why. I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays.
Tell me why.
I don't like Mondays. I wanna shoot. Ooh. The whole day down. Telex machine is kept so clean and it types to a waging world. A mother feels so shocked, father's world is rocked, and their thoughts turn to their own little girl. Sweet 16 ain't that peachy keen, now it ain't so neat to admit defeat. They can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reasons do you need?
Tell me why.
Lesson today is how to die. And then the bullhorn crackles and the captain tackles with the problems of the house and wife. And he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to die? Die, oh, and the silicon chip inside her head gets switched to overload. Oh, and nobody's gonna go to school today. She's gonna make them stay at home. And daddy doesn't understand it. He always said she was good as gold. And he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to be shown?
Tell me why.
What do you think, Ryan Blake?
I think that's wonderful. I never knew what that song was about, and I totally know that song, and I probably thought it was Elvis Costello the whole time.
Yeah, he does. Bob Geldof does sound a lot like Elvis Costello, for sure.
I love how grandiose that whole song
is.
Yeah. I made a hand gesture to
grandiose. That's come up a lot in like an angry heartbreak songs where the song would be super happy sounding, but the lyrics are just super pissed off, you know?
Right.
And that's such a great thing that you can do in music, because you can make the lyrics and the music totally separate from each other in the vibe that they carry,
you know? Since I put this list together a couple days ago, I've had that song in my head. Like way more than any of the other ones on my list. Like constantly. And I'm walking down the halls at work singing it. And yeah,
tell me why.
Yeah, it's super catchy, but it's really dark underneath. Anyway, Ryan Blake, what's your number six?
Number six.
My number six is the greatest band of all time.
Oh.
And I felt like I could have chosen two different options.
I already did the Boomtown Rats. What are you talking about?
That's great. And I'm taking a little bit of license with this one because the song wasn't written about murder, but it inspired murder.
Yes.
So this is Helter Skelter by the Beatles.
Nice pick. Nice pick.
And
okay.
I looked up here. Check this out. Charles Manson told his followers the White Album songs including Helter Skelter, were a part of the Beatles' coded prophecy of an apocalyptic war in which racist and non-racist whites would be maneuvered into virtually exterminating each other over the treatment of blacks.
Wow.
Upon this war's conclusion, after black militants would kill off the few whites they would know to have survived, Manson and his companions would emerge from an underground city in which they would have escaped the conflict. As the only remaining whites...
I thought this song was about a roller coaster.
As the only remaining whites, they would rule blacks who, as the vision went, would be incapable of running America. Manson employed Helter Skelter as the term for this epic sequence of events.
Wow. That's crazy.
I thought maybe that he wrote it in blood at the Tate resonance when
they wrote pig.
He wrote
Piggies or something?
Piggies, maybe? Okay.
Or something like that.
Another white album.
Maybe they wrote Helter Skelter, too. I don't know. It's very possible.
But it certainly was the motivation for lots of dead people.
Yes. It is not technically about murder. Paul McCartney wrote it about a roller coaster.
Yeah.
But I think it counts because, yeah.
Some would say this is the very first metal song.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they kind of go crazy in it. But I've also heard that it was Paul just saying to John, like, dude, I can be dirty and grungy too.
Right.
Try this on for size.
Well, the version on the Beatles anthology is sorely lacking in rock.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell that was.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, but I also have heard a jam of it that's like a 15-minute jam on it that I've heard.
Is it more rock like this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's definitely unbelievable. I've never heard it again since this one time I heard it on like Breakfast Branch of the Beatles or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know where they find that stuff. But this song definitely is the heaviest song of their canon.
Yeah.
And
it's 67 from the White Album. Right?
68. Yeah. I believe so.
I'm going to
The White Album.
Check that.
The glorious White Album. And
68.
Yep. Sorry, I'm such a nerd. I apologize. But this song offers no apologies.
So this is my number 6, Helter Skelter by the Beatles.
When I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide. Where I stop. Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying Charlie Manson is right in any way, but when you listen to the ending of that song and then it goes right into Long, Long, Long off the White Album, it's kind of possible to see how someone who is kind of on the edge of losing their mind could just completely go over the deep end after hearing that. Because, like, you think it's over and then it comes back and there's, like, all this guitar wailing and... You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So, I mean, I'm not saying those, you know, Sharon Tate and company had to die, but, you know, I'm just saying I understand, you know, why Charlie's already messed up mind.
You're just saying it's possible.
Well, it happened.
Yeah.
It's more than possible.
Yeah. It's plausible.
It's plausible.
Right. But we should still lock him up.
Number five.
Locked up. Let's move on. My number five.
Number five.
This is really weird how our songs are kind of paralleling each other. I did not pick anything related to Charlie Manson, but I did pick a song related to a serial killer.
Ah.
Yeah. I'm talking about Ted Bundy. In the late 80s, he was tried and convicted of murdering and raping and murdering, whatever order you prefer. More than 20, I don't forget how many, just dozens of women.
Raping the horses and running off on the women?
Right. Something like that. And there's a big trial and he was on death row. And up until the very end, before he was executed, he never admitted to doing any of these crimes. And it was like psychosexual murders and stuff. It was just really sick stuff he was into. And there's a band out of Los Angeles in the late 80s that were a little demented in their own right, and they wrote a song about it. I'm talking about
Dead Kennedys?
No. I'm talking about Jane's Addiction.
Jane's Addiction.
Yes. Mm. I am not a huge fan of these guys. I admire them because for their time, they were very innovative and Perry Farrell and Dave Navarro, Steve Perkins, and what's that guy's name? Eric Avery. They were great players.
Yeah.
And that was just a great band.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Really unusual.
Very, very odd. But especially because they came up right around the time, like Guns N' Roses was huge, Motley Crue, you know, all those guys. And they were doing something completely different, kind of psychedelic, still really heavy,
rock. Funky.
Little funk in there. Yeah. And Perry Farrell is just a weirdo, man. That guy looks like a giant grasshopper or something. He's a super skinny, weirdo Jewish guy. But in 1988, they came out with their album called Nothing Shocking. And there was a song on there.
Is it the song called Ted Just Admit It?
Yes. Because Ted would not admit it, that he killed those women. And the underlying message in the song, the big hook, is sex is violent. And according to Ted Bundy, it is. But he was in denial about what he had done. And it's a very odd song, kind of captured that. So the song was used to great effect in the movie Natural Born Killers, if you remember. And I'm a big fan of this song. And I want to hear it. So play it. Ted Just Admit It. Jane's Addiction from 1988. My number seven.
Number seven.
Number five.
Number
sorry.
Five.
I'm way off. Number five.
Number five. We'll be right back.
Can you believe there was actually a period in time when Dave Navarro wasn't some douchebag with nipple piercings?
It is hard to believe.
It's hard to believe back in 1988 he actually was in a band that was cool.
Yeah.
That was, you know, on the cutting edge of stuff. And
he's a great guitar player, but he, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. But
eyeliner.
Eyeliner happened.
Guyliner happened. I forgot to mention the clips in there of the person talking. That was actually Ted Bundy being interviewed and saying that he didn't do it, blah, blah, blah. You know. So, yeah, that was my number.
Creepers. Four,
number five?
That was your number five.
My number five.
Yeah.
Jane's Addiction. Ted just admit it. Ryan Blake, what's your number five?
My number five is about a guy with a very common name.
Yes.
And he was gonna bail to Mexico because he shot his old lady.
Oh, I think I know this.
He caught her messing around with another man.
Oh.
This is in my list of picks as well.
Okay. This was an alternate for me as well.
So this is Hey Joe. It's a common name, would you say?
Common name. That's what the song's really about, is how common his name is.
But yeah. This was originally performed by some American band called The Leaves.
Really?
In 1965. Yeah. A Los Angeles garage band called The Leaves.
Huh.
And then Hendrix recorded it with their debut recording in 1966.
This is off
with
of the
Experience.
Yeah, Are You Experienced?
Yeah. So this is my number five.
This is a great song. I was gonna say there's one part where he said like, "Oh, you heard you shot your woman down."
Yeah.
There's one part where I was like, because I never really noticed it before when I was listening to the song the other day. He says, "Shoot her one time for me."
I don't think
I really?
Noticed that line.
Yeah, he says that. Shoot her one more time. Shoot her one time for me, baby, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, really? Okay. He's celebrating the murder.
Hendrix is, personally. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Hendrix is celebrating
yeah.
the murder.
No, I gotcha.
Well, she was messing around with another man, so
yeah.
Maybe she had it coming.
Probably.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is Jimi Hendrix, 1966. Hey, Joe. Messing around with another man.
fun song.
Yeah, it's a nice message.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get away with you know, messing around with another man when you're a girl.
Right.
I like how that song pretty much is not criticizing Joe at all.
No.
No, it's just like, it's just a statement of fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she obviously had it coming.
Yeah. I totally Clearly. Hear you, Joe. I totally hear you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to, this is so weird. We're staying parallel here. We're again going to stick with the old lady being shot down portion of our show.
Timeless theme.
Yeah. You know, I mean, sometimes they have it coming. This song, I don't, it's really weird how it's working out that way.
Yeah.
My number four is, it's from Neil Young. It's off his first, his first record with Crazy Horse, his second solo record. Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere.
Okay.
This is Down by the River.
Ah, I didn't know this is a, okay.
Do you ever listen to the lyrics?
Oh, totally know the song.
Down by the River, I shot my baby. Shot her dead. Neil Young wrote this song. Right. Neil Young wrote this song while he was delirious in bed from a 103 degree fever. He wrote this song and Cowgirl in the Sand in the same period in time where he was like out of his mind with fever. He didn't remember writing it, but he said that that's what how it came out. Something about getting shot down by the river. it's another super long one and
9 minutes.
Yeah, I know. But you can cut it out if you like.
No way.
I'm glad you won't, because this song has a kick-ass little jam in it.
It totally does.
And it's the start of one of the greatest collaborations ever, Neil Young with Crazy Horse. And this is the first song off that first record. No. Cinnamon Girl is, but it's off that same first record. And you can tell they were like just kind of feeling each other out during the solo. There's another guitar in there and Neil is playing the lead bit and they're kind of doing a back and forth thing and kind of sparring in a way. And the rhythm section is just holding it down for 9 minutes. And
cool.
Down by the River, Neil Young, 1969. Blame Canada. He really shot her down by the river. That was my number four. That was Neil Young with Crazy Horse. How good are they?
That was pretty amazing.
They're good.
Did I mention I saw them at the Greek?
You did. God damn it.
Yeah. I got put up in the pit section.
You were right next to the stage.
I'm right next to the stage, man.
You're awesome.
I had to have my back turned, sadly. But I still turned around a lot.
Were you wearing a yellow shirt?
It was red.
Oh. Just say staff
like
on
maroon.
It
said floor staff. Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's better than just staff.
And also, before the show, I was in charge of checking people's badges at the dinner at the kitchen where everyone had dinner.
Uh-huh.
And so the whole band went through there, and Neil Young went through. I checked his badge. I was like, "Excuse me, sir, let me see that." And you know, he's like, "Ha ha," and he showed me, and we shared a nice laugh.
I'm sure he remembers it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, remember that time?
Remember that time where I
checked your badge and made a joke?
That was awesome. Remember when you were playing the game? 2002? Okay. So anyway, that's my number four. Ryan Blake, what is your number four?
I was giggling like a schoolgirl over here.
He was. He was.
Because it's very parallel.
More parallels. Right?
Yeah, more parallels.
Oh, boy.
This is Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
Oh.
Ooh.
And this is the song Ohio.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Which is about, of course, the Kent State massacre.
Yes.
In Ohio, which was in May of 1970.
Mm-hmm.
The song came out in like June or July of 1970 as a single.
Yeah, I heard they like wrote it and recorded it like instantly.
Yeah, and it was just some anti-Vietnam rally.
Mm-hmm.
And the
National Guard.
The National Guard opened fire on the crowd, and four kids died.
I think, unfortunately, I feel like we're going to see that coming up with the Occupy Wall Street. Things are going to get out of hand.
It could
at some point. So yeah.
But there's that famous picture of the guy that's dead on the ground, and the girl that's, you know, the young girl that's got her hand in the air like crying. You know.
Yeah.
Everybody's seen that picture, and that's. You know, and it moved Neil Young. Neil Young wrote this on his own.
Right.
And performed it with Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. It's an awesome song.
It really
but
is.
But very parallel it's to the last Neil Young song.
Yes.
But the lyrics are...
A little more socially conscious, a little more poignant.
It kind of alludes to the fact there's not a whole lot of lyrics here, but... Tin soldiers and Nixon coming, we're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drum...
Drumming.
The drumming. Four dead in Ohio.
Yep.
Not Ohio. It's Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That must have been a crazy time. It's unbelievable that...
what if you knew her and found her dead on the ground?
How can you run when you know?
How can you run when you know? Awesome.
Heavy. Heavy.
Yeah.
And so the guitars are heavy as hell, too.
Yeah.
That's all Neil. I mean, if you hear Crosby, Stills, Nash without Neil, obviously, it's... It's like neutered, you know. Neil brought the meat.
He did.
Yeah.
Wow.
He did, man. Let's hear it. Ryan Blake's number four.
Soldiers and Nixon's gone.